5 minutes after 3, and this meeting of the House Committee on Community and Regional Affairs is called to order. Presence are Representatives Maru, Wallace, Furness, Gruenberg, and Phillips. Is Neil coming? Anyone?
I haven't seen him.
Today we're going to be discussing two bills. House Bill 15, which relates to advisory elections before annexations take place. And the other bill is House Bill 139, which has been before our committee for a couple of weeks of discussion on and off. And we will be talking about it briefly and making some decisions on how to proceed with that legislation. I think before we call witnesses, I should make a few statements to the members and to those folks on the teleconference line regarding the nature of House Bill 15 and the changes that it has undergone, bringing us to this moment. I'm the sponsor of the bill. I was originally contacted by the certain citizens in Haines who were very concerned about an annexation which was proposed there during the last legislative legislature. And the concern was that the annexation was taking place in opposition to the desires of the people in the area. The city of Haines asking for the annexation of considerable property in the Haines Borough, another municipality.
So it's all within an organized area.
It is all within an organized area, that's correct. And the issue continued. There was an advisory vote. The Haines Borough voted overwhelmingly in opposition to the annexation. The Haines City voted somewhat in support. The total area-wide vote was in opposition. And so it went. As a consequence of this series of events, citizens came to my office and asked that something be put into law. Representative Kopanen is now present. Asked that something be put into law to strengthen the power of the people with regard to annexation recommended or proposed by the Local Boundary Commission. The bill before you in its original form is kind of a first cut at responding to that concern. And I think possibly went a little bit farther than I now consider appropriate. What the bill did, however, in essence, was three things. It said, number one, that if an annexation is to be proposed to the legislature by the Local Boundary Commission, then an advisory vote will be held. Two, the area that would be polled would be the area to be annexed. And three, that the municipalities involved also would be polled to determine the support or opposition in those municipalities. The language of the bill, as you can see, is rather strong and possibly even goes to the level of being unconstitutional insofar as it states that the Local Boundary Commission may not vote on the proposal until the advisory election has been held, and it's general opinion that the Local Boundary Commission has the right to act as it sees fit. So the language that is found in committee substitute number one basically puts the responsibility on the municipality requesting the annexation. And if you take a look at that first committee substitute, you'll find that it says the following, that first of all, if an annexation is proposed and is being deliberated by the Local Boundary Commission, then an advisory election shall be held in the area proposed for annexation. If the annexation has been requested by a municipality, then the municipality requesting the annexation will conduct the election and will present the findings to the Local Boundary Commission. So all that simply says is that if you are a municipality and you're asking to annex an area, it is your responsibility to poll that area you wish to be annexed and to provide the Local Boundary Commission with the sentiments of the area that would be affected. The bill goes on to say that if the annexation is not requested by the municipality, for example, if the Local Boundary Commission independently decides that it wishes to propose an annexation, then it becomes the state's responsibility to conduct the election. The point being that if the annexation is proposed by a municipality, then there is no fiscal impact in that part of the bill. The municipality would be responsible, no fiscal impact to the state, the municipality would be responsible for conducting that poll. Whereas if the state initiates the annexation, then the state would have a responsibility to poll the citizens involved. The second section of the bill, or actually the second subsection B, on lines 27 down, says that if a municipality requests, well, let me read it. It says, in addition, a municipality may conduct an advisory election on the annexation proposal in which all municipal voters may participate. All municipal voters may participate, and the municipality may present the results of the election to the local boundary commission if the area of the proposed annexation is located within the municipality or proposed to be annexed to the municipality. What that means is that if you are a municipality and part of your territory is to be annexed, you may request and conduct an election and present that evidence to the local boundary commission. Secondly, and this is just a moment here. Secondly, the annexing municipality itself may poll itself to show local support, and that is what number two on line four means, that a municipality with land which may be annexed can poll itself to show its opinions, and an annexing municipality can poll itself to demonstrate support from the annexing municipality. So basically, that's what we've got here, a requirement that the area to be annexed be polled, and an option for the municipality containing that area or the municipality requesting the annexation to be polled at the request of those municipalities. Just to maybe conclude my own remarks, I would refer you for a moment to committee substitute number two, which is a more limited version of the bill, which simply says it eliminates the portion that deals with state-initiated annexations, and the purpose of that was to create a zero fiscal note. CS number two only covers the case where a municipality is requesting the annexation. And in that case, that municipality will pay for the advisory vote of the area to be annexed. And once again, the municipality, if any, including the area to be annexed, may request and conduct a poll. And the area, the annexing municipality, may request and conduct a poll of itself. In all three cases, there would be no fiscal impact upon the state. Each municipality would be responsible for conducting its own poll. Before we go to witnesses, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. I know that was a quick run through. Representative Maru.
Are we on telecomm?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Haynes and Kodiak will have someone coming in shortly.
Okay, I just had a couple of comments to make, if I may, and that is, one of them is this House Research Agency report we have here, 85-173, and says in here, according to Mr. Sanders of the Local Boundary Commission, they are more concerned with the substance of public testimony than the volume for or against annexation. And my brief experience with the Local Boundary Commission does verify that, and I object to it, and I will continue to object to it, that they take the point of view that they're going to do what they want to do, never mind what the public wants. Also, from Commissioner Emil Nadi, we have a letter dated today, as a matter of fact, in which he says that the department is opposed to this measure, but on the other hand, it has a zero fiscal impact. I also oppose any part of the executive branch getting involved in a legislative matter when there is zero fiscal impact. I don't think it is up to the department, provided there is zero fiscal impact, I don't think it's up to the department to take a philosophical position. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maru, Representative Wallace. Let me respond to that briefly. On the original bill, there was a rather high fiscal note, you'll find, because of the many large elections that might result. We're scrapping that one. In committee substitute number one, there is a fiscal note of roughly $9,000, and that is to cover those unusual cases where the local boundary commission initiates an annexation and then has to pay for the poll. And in committee substitute number two, there's a zero fiscal note because the only time these elections would be held would be with a municipally requested annexation, and that municipality would be responsible for the monies involved. And I hope that clarifies it. I know with three versions, it's a little confusing. Mr. Gruenberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm having duplicated a research paper that was prepared at my request by the House Research Agency. And the research agency has looked at 10 states and how those states' annexation laws work. and they're synopsized in a paragraph or two. And none of these states that I can, as having looked at that, I haven't studied it, but none of those states have an animal like the local boundary commission. So their constitutions are somewhat different than Alaska's. But this may be somewhat helpful, and I would hope we would not take final action on the bill today. Bob, I understand that you'll have that for the committee members, so you'll get that before you leave, and you can take a look at what other states have done, and they've had a variety of very innovative solutions to this problem.
Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. We will be holding another hearing on the bill on Wednesday, and we'll proceed to evaluate the information that you provide us at this meeting and in the interim period. It might be worthwhile to point out that the original intent of the citizens who approached me on this was for a constitutional amendment to change the local boundary commission's operating procedures to guarantee more public participation, etc. With my feeling at that time that it would be very difficult to move such an amendment, and therefore took this approach, but I would have no objection to the committee exploring every avenue in terms of addressing the issues of the local boundary commission.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative?
I think that may be something to look at. And I look at the 17,809 people who recently voted, if my figure is right, give or take a person or two, from the ATC. 117,000. I was only off by 100,000.
You have a short teleconference time. Thank you, Representative. And gentlemen, I appreciate what is obviously a lot of interest in this issue. At this time, because we have limited teleconference time, I'd like to just invite Deputy Commissioner Smith to, if you'd like, sir, make one or two brief comments. I know you have another meeting to attend. I'm sure that you can fire up our crowd in Haines, and we wish you luck.
Try to make it a little interesting.
You depress your button here.
I'm Jeff Smith. I'm Deputy Commissioner of Community Regional Affairs. I think I understand what the sponsor is attempting to accomplish with these bills and commend them for it. However, we don't think that there is a solution to what the chairman end is, and that is basically the people who drafted the Constitution, I think, were pretty progressive in this area. In a legislative review, annexation, by its very nature, is controversial. And the writers of the Constitution recognize that sometimes the public interest in a particular annexation is greater than the individuals who are located in that area to be annexed, right to decide whether to be annexed or not. And I think that if you review the past local, the past legislative review annexations that have taken place around the state, and I point to Nome as one example, which is probably the most controversial annexation that I've seen in the state. And the legislature, through their review process established by law, acted extremely responsible in taking the role that's established by them in law. They were able to fashion a compromise that met the needs of the municipality, that met the needs of the citizens of the municipality, and satisfied the needs of the individual landowners of the area proposed for annexation. And so we think that what this bill is going to show you is what we already know, that if there's a legislative review annexation being proposed, that it's controversial. And a vote is simply going to tell you the exact numbers of the controversy, but basically that's what you're going to know. At the end of the election, at considerable expense to the municipalities, and I think everybody knows going in that these are going to be controversial.
Question, Representative Broom?
Yes. I think that's absolutely, I'm sure that's absolutely correct, what the Deputy Commissioner has said. This has obviously going to have a lot of effect on a policy basis around the state now and in the future. And what I'm wondering is whether it would be of interest to the members of the Commission, since this is a constitutional question, really, to have House research. You have got a paper here indicating the history of the legislative annexation here. But what my question is we're really looking at the role of the local boundary commission here. And what I'm wondering is whether we, as a committee, or the chairman on behalf of the committee, could ask House Research to get a synopsis of the constitutional convention history on that one section, distribute it to the members, because I'd like to see why the framers of our Constitution did a local boundary commission as opposed to the method that's used in any of these other states.
Thank you, Representative Bob. We have a request from Representative Gruenberg to get the constitutional convention history on the development of the local boundary commission, please. Senator Coghill was to be here today, and maybe we'll be here later and may have some comments. Representative Gruenberg. Representative Kopanen.
I was going to take actually also ask Senator Victor Fisher, who was, in fact, if I remember correctly, the architect of that particular section at the Constitutional Convention.
Yes, anything we can shed some light on, I'd like to know.
We will ask Senator Fisher and Senator Coghill to provide us with comments or their presence at our next hearing, and we'll also get the written history for the next meeting regarding the Constitutional Convention history and the development of the Local Boundary Commission. Representative Maru, and then we'll go to witnesses in Haines.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Commissioner Smith has hit the nail on the head with regard to what the crux of the matter is, and that is some faction of government deciding that they know what the public good is, what the public purpose is, which is higher than that of the people. And I say that there is nothing higher than the will of the people. And if the will of the people want it, they should get it. If they don't want it, they shouldn't get it. And it should not be up to the Local Boundary Commission nor the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to determine on their own that the people should not get what the people want. There is no public good above that of the people.
Mr. Smith, make comment. And Deputy Commissioner, please feel free, as long as you have to be with us, just remain at the table, and if you feel it's appropriate to speak out, just go for it.
Okay. Just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick response to that. I think that fundamentally, that's the issue of democratic government. But there are items and there are situations where the overall public good overrides the individual public interest. And that's what I think we're talking about here. My individual right as a landowner to object to an annexation that would provide public benefits to the residents of the entire community, I think, need an opportunity for that to be heard and for a decision to be made if the overall public interest overrides that interest of the individual.
Yes, and just one thing, if I could, Representative, do you think maybe we could just listen to these folks? Because we're going to be off the network in 25, 35 minutes, and there are several of them there.
You want to let this stand?
No, I was going to not let it stand. I was going to recognize you to speak. But first, let me just say that it might be of some value for all of us to recognize that this bill is not giving power to the people. This bill is requiring that the Local Boundary Commission be presented with the people's views, and there's a very big difference there. Representative Maru, and then Mr. Smith, and then to Haines.
I take issue with Commissioner Smith. I think that the rights of the individual are supreme, or at least should be supreme. That was the basis behind the beginning of this republic. It's a republic, not a democracy. And the individual rights should be supreme. That is the basis of the whole thing. It was Hitler himself, Adolf Hitler, who said that something to the effect that social concerns override those of the individual. And I violently disagree with that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make one quick point, and I think that I have very strong feelings on this piece of legislation. I have very strong feelings on what Representative Maru said. What I would suggest is maybe, since you are going to hold another hearing Wednesday, that I'd be allowed to come back here and debate this issue with the members of the committee when we don't eat into the time of the representatives from Haines and Cody.
I think that would be very, very valuable, and maybe we can expand that to be a rather full discussion of these issues, not only as they relate to the bill, but to determine whether modifications in the Constitution are appropriate, because obviously the interest by the members and yourself goes way beyond the contents of this legislation. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Thank you for being with us. We'll see you on Wednesday. Ladies and gentlemen, please. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will go to Haines and hear our first witness. Please come forward and identify yourself.
Bob Henderson, the Haines-Borough Mayor. The Haines-Borough Assembly passed a resolution last January supporting House Bill 15. Assembly feels that the interest of municipalities involved should be a consideration by the Local Boundary Commission. As a background, I have been involved in three attempts of the City of Haines to annex outlying areas. They were partially successful in their first attempt about 10 to 12 years ago, but have failed in the last two attempts during the past 6 years. Their failure was due primarily because of an advisory vote that the borough held. The first election, even the residents of the city voted not to be annexed the outside area. As a result, the city decided to drop the annexation petition. I would like for you to look at a little more closely at the last annexation procedure. The city of Haines became owners of a commercial dock outside the city limits. According to Title 29, a city can operate an airport, a park, and other things, but not a dock. So, extraterritorially. So, the city was advised that they should annex the land to the dock so they could legally operate it. They submitted their petition to Communion Regional Affairs for a boundary extension, a narrow strip of land from the city boundary to the dock at Lutac. Communion Regional Affairs approved that petition, but they went on and recommended that the city expand in all directions for a total of some 10 square miles. The local boundary commission arrived here with a larger annexation clearly on their minds. Fortunately, an electrical power outage prevented the hearing from continuing past the city stage. The local boundary commission adjourned the meeting until they could return again for another hearing. In the meantime, the city council decided they did not want to annex the full 10 miles, but would settle for 7 square miles. The remaining 3 square miles had few residents. Again, the local boundary commission attempted to return to Haines, but the weather prevented them from arriving. January was upon us, and the local boundary commission had either to make a proposal to the legislature or hold off for another year. They decided to allow the city to annex the dock extraterritorially so that they could operate it legally. No one opposed the annexation until it was accepted by the 83 legislature. Early in the spring, the local boundary commission returned and continued their public hearing. Despite the fact that some 40 persons testified against annexation and only 10 testified for the city, and those are mostly city employees, the local boundary commission accepted the city's new petition for some 7 square miles. During the hearing, the borough attempted to point out to the local boundary commission the devastating effects that the change would have upon the borough. There are some 1,800 residents in the Haines borough. 1,000 of these approximately live in the city of Haines, and 800 live outside. These 800 outside help to determine how much municipal assistance and revenue sharing the borough receives. The borough uses its property tax only for school support. Other monies we receive are used to operate our borough offices, public library, a museum, and the Center for the Arts. If the annexation occurred, 500 residents would be moved from the outside area into the city, leaving only 300 residents to qualify for state funds. We could not continue to support the above three functions and would no longer be a functional borough, but would become a school board. Once again, the borough decided to place an advisory vote on the ballot in the fall election. And again, a large majority of the borough residents voted against annexation. Since the local boundary commission already made its decision to annex, we had no alternative but to go to the legislature. They understand about votes, and the resolution against annexation passed unanimously in both houses. Continually during the public hearings, citizens could not understand how in a democratic society some 6 strangers could come into a community for a few hours and make a major decision that affected all of us. You and I know that this is because it was the intent of the state constitution. This bill would at least allow for a vote as in a democracy, although the local boundary commission would not be bound to the decision. But it would give the members of the local boundary commission a better idea of how the public really feels. In many public hearings, a small vocal minority may convince the commission that this is what the majority really wants. The vote would clarify that. At the present time, the Haines borough and the city of Haines are working together for the first time to make a better community. One of our major reasons for annexation was the fact that the area outside the city is growing fast and the borough did not have the power of planning and zoning. Since the last annexation attempt, the voters gave the borough the power of planning and zoning by service area. We are now working on a comprehensive plan. We hope to soon have one or more service areas adjacent to the city. Furthermore, we do not object to local areas wish to join the city by local action for services the city can offer. But we do object to large annexations that work to destroy that if municipalities feel an advisory election would be helpful, local boundary commissions should allow that to occur and take that vote into consideration before it makes its final decision. This is not taking anything away from the local boundary commission, and it would make the residents feel as though they live in a democratic society. I would like to add one thing. We were to have Mosquito Lake residents on this teleconference today, but because of the hour, the school was not out at Mosquito Lake, and so they were unable to be on this conference. However, with talk with Bill Kerrs this morning, he gave me permission to quote him that he heard of no one out there who was opposed to House Bill 15, and he believed that had they had a teleconference, they would have had a number of people there who would have supported House Bill 15. Right. We do have a number of other people here at the teleconference who would like to testify, but I will turn it over to you, and you can turn it back if you want some of these others.
Thank you very much, Mayor Henderson. I appreciate your comments. Representative Gruenberg has a short question, and then we would like to go to your next witness. It might be interesting to the folks in Haines to know that, to my surprise, I've received letters in support of this bill from all over the state, and frankly, I didn't expect it to receive the attention that it has. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor, you realize that this bill will only permit an advisory vote because we believe that that's all that the Constitution permits. Do you understand that?
I certainly do, but at least an advisory vote is something.
Let me ask you on a policy basis. Do you think that we should consider a constitutional amendment to allow, at least in certain cases, the local residents to make some of these decisions for themselves without having to go through the local boundary commission?
I certainly would agree with that, because it's really hard to understand how three or six strangers in a community for a few hours can make a vital decision like this.
Thank you very much, Mayor Henderson. Would you be kind enough to bring your next witness forward, please?
Yes, my name is Frank Haas. I'm a borough assembly person from within the city, and I would like to go on record as stating that I definitely do support SB 15. I would hope that it would be passed. I would also support the concept of the constitutional amendment to allow, rather than an advisory vote, an actual vote by the impacted areas and let the majority rule. I think that that would probably be the most equitable thing that could be done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Haas. Appreciate your comments today, sir. Is there someone else there who would like to come forward and testify?
Yes, sir. Representative Gall, this is Lewis Nelson. I only knew about this teleconference less than 20 minutes ago. I'm sorry I didn't hear it on the radio, as I understand it was not announced until yesterday or within the past 48 hours. If it were possible, before the Wednesday teleconference, would it be possible to have the changes that are being suggested sent up here? I believe we would certainly appreciate that. It just so happens that I know people in the Palmer area and in Fairbanks that have gone through this hassle or hustle or whatever you might want to call it, and they have never run out in their own respect to what they really want. Some kind of a vote, it seems to me, will bring us nearer to a democratic society. And like Mayor Henderson says, excuse the repetition, how can 4 to 6 people come in a community and decide what those people want without some kind of a vote? And I certainly do not wish to take too much time, but we certainly appreciate your cooperation, and I certainly would like to see Bill number 15 go through, if not the way it was originally written up, some way so that people can have a democratic society. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nelson. I very much appreciate your comments. Representative Maru will have a question or a comment. I just would like to respond to your question first, however, about the differences in the committee substitutes that have been proposed. All that they really do is fix the responsibility for who will conduct these polls. If you take a look at your original bill, everything is pretty much the same that... just 1 minute, please. Everything is pretty much the same except that the language has changed a little bit to describe the presentation of the poll to the local boundary commission. It has changed slightly in the last section to explain who would pay for these various polls and under what circumstances they would be conducted. Specifically, the area proposed to be annexed would be polled at all times. The municipality recommending the annexation would pay for it. Any municipality, including the area to be annexed, would be polled if and only if the municipality requested that it be polled. In other words, if the borough was going to lose some land, the borough assembly would have to request the poll and would also have to pay for it. The annexing municipality, the city requesting the annexation, could also poll itself, and it would pay the costs of that. But those last two would be optional, based upon a request from the affected municipalities. Number one would be mandatory. The area which would be annexed would be polled at all times. If the an annexation is being proposed by a municipality, that municipality will pay the costs of the poll, and that's basically the changes. There's no real change in the substance of the bill. Representative Maru?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to add that I agree with this last gentleman who spoke, and I also want to mention for his information that there was a case recently in Fairbanks where the Local Boundary Commission decided to allow the city of Fairbanks to annex land owned by one man over and above his objections, and now he has sued. He has filed a large lawsuit against the Local Boundary Commission for doing just that. I obviously disagree with the Local Boundary Commission doing that. I feel that government in this country should serve and not rule.
Thank you very much, Representative. And also, Mr. Nelson, if at the end of the teleconference, if Alita will get on the line with the teleconference office, we will arrange to have copies of the two proposed committee substitutes telecopied up to you for duplication locally. Thank you again for your comments, sir. And if you would bring forward the next witness, we would appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Hello, I'm Judy Bolander, and I'm a borough assembly member. I would like to go on record in support of House Bill 15, and I also would like to voice my support of a constitutional amendment to eliminate the local boundary commission's power over this type of decision-making. I also would like to comment on the way that the decision was made here in Haines, that the local boundary commission did not meet here in Haines, but had a teleconference and broadcast that teleconference over the radio, which I feel was something that they should never be allowed to do again. They should follow the laws along with everyone else. I also have a question for Peter concerning the way that they have changed House Bill 15, and I'm wondering whether or not the votes that he is talking about are considered separately.
Yes, thank you. That's basically correct. Considered separately in the sense that the first one, the vote of the area to be annexed, is the required vote. Let's take the Haines example. In the Haines annexation, if the committee substitutes or one of them were to be adopted, what would happen would be this. The city of Haines would have to pay for the polling of the area they wish to be annexed or that they wish to have annexed. Then the Haines borough would say, we, the borough assembly, want to demonstrate our borough's reaction to this, and you, the borough assembly, would pay for the poll in the borough to demonstrate the reaction of the entire borough. The city of Haines might say, well, we have strong support for this in the city, and we wish to see the people of the city polled, and they would pay for that. By the same token, either the city or the borough could request a poll of the other, and the requesting municipality would pay the cost. So the only thing that we're dealing with in the committee substitutes is who pays for the election. But basically, either just the area that was going to be annexed or the other two could be polled, and that material would be presented to the local boundary commission either separately or together at the discretion of the people who handle the pieces of paper. Does that answer your question clearly enough?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further comments from Haines?
Jerry Clifton, Haynesboro Assembly Member. I'm here to concur with Mayor Henderson's testimony and to stand in support of House Bill 15, and I, without having a good look at it, I think that I would probably support substitute number two. I feel that some of the spinoff of this would, even without a constitutional change, would remove some of the stigma from the Boundaries Commission that has been built for years around the, you know, the good old boys and the bad old boys and all that type of thing. And I feel that the Boundary Commission, that stigma could be lifted somewhat just through this bill. I also would like to say that we do realize that this is an advisory election and an advisory election being just that, to advise the Boundary Commission as our desires. I've also just utterly appalled at the Community and Regional Affairs way that they handled the Haines annexation proposal, and would like to see some stiffer guidelines put forth by your committee, Representative Gold, along those lines, and I do stand in favor of this bill.
Thank you very much.
much, sir. I appreciate your comments. The only thing that I need to say is that the Constitution, as a matter of fact, do we still have that available? Let me read you the constitutional provision regarding the Local Boundary Commission, which will give you some sense of what we are up against or what one would be up against in trying to limit the Local Boundary Commission. It says, a local boundary commission or board shall be established by law in the executive branch or government. The commission or board may consider any proposed local government boundary change. It may present proposed changes to the legislature during the first 10 days of any regular session, and then, as you know, the change becomes effective unless the legislature overrides it. That phrase, they may consider and they may present, basically suggests that we cannot do anything which would limit their ability to do so, nor limit their ability to propose an annexation. However, some guidelines have been established, for example, that a public meeting be held, and I believe that additional guidelines can be drawn up, but it must be done very carefully. And for that reason, the discussion of possible constitutional amendments have come up, and I'm sure will be explored further. But thank you so much for your support, and I appreciate your comments, sir. Representative Maru has got a comment, too.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to mention, you just talked about the report by the Local Boundary Commission to the legislature before the 10th day of the session. We did get it this year on the 9th day of the session. However, in contrast to most of the things we get where every single legislator of the 60 gets a copy, there was only two copies, to the best of my knowledge, given to the legislature. One went to the Speaker of the House, one went to the President of the Senate. And I didn't get to see that report until about 2 weeks later when I happened to come across one during one of our committee meetings.
Thank you very much. That is certainly an example of the sorts of procedures that I think we could put into place, elaborating rather than restricting their responsibility, saying that they need to not only report officially to the Speaker, but also to each member, and I appreciate your comments.
I agree.
Thank you, Mr. Clifton. Further people from Haines wish to speak?
One further comment, Representative Gullis. Maybe this could be handled with just an administrative regulation of some kind to have the Boundary Commission hold their meetings in the areas that are going to be annexed or discussed rather than, in Anchorage or Juneau.
Well, thank you very much, and it's my hope that at the next meeting, I think we'll be ready to confront someone from the Local Boundary Commission directly and try to deal with some of these issues, possibly going into their regulations and how they could be improved to eliminate further problems. Thank you again.
This is Susan Fredericks, and I'm just a citizen of the borough, and I would highly support House Bill number 15. My husband and I have written to many of the representatives just stating that very reason, that we feel that we are a society that has freedom, and the freedom would be a right to have an advisory election, stating that we have desires and that we would or would not want a boundary to be annexed or not. And we would even back an amendment also if that would be in effect. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Fredericks. I appreciate your comments today. And by the way, while Mayor Henderson is there, just a little aside on the issues of the government's involvement with the people. Well, maybe I better go into it another time, but there seem to be some condemnation proceedings going on in Haines also at property values, alleged property values way below what I think the borough is assessing. And I'll be back in touch with you on that. I think once we open the...
Hey, don't feel bad. It's happening in Anchorage.
Representative Phillips indicates that the same things are happening in Anchorage. And I think once we open the door to the relationship between the people and their government, we may find all sorts of things to discuss. Thank you again. Is there anyone further who'd like to come forward to speak at this time?
What's the person for you?
This is John Kohler, a resident of the borough. And I would voice for House Bill number 15, and also concur with what Mr. Henderson has said in his testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kohler. I appreciate your coming in to speak today. Is there anyone else in Haines who wishes to testify?
I believe that is all who wish to testify at this time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Was that Mayor Henderson?
That's Mayor Henderson.
Bob, maybe just as an aside here, maybe you would be able to send me the assessed value of that cabin and property that are located at the foot of the intersection of the Mud Bay Road and
your
the
place.
Small track road. No, I say to the committee, it's not my place, but I just received information that the state is trying to
to get that land at a price of 33 cents a square foot. That's waterfront property and rather extraordinarily valuable. And I'm getting a little disturbed by some of these things. Maybe you'd like to let us know exactly what the real property value is up there.
All right, I'll turn that over to my assessor this afternoon.
Thank you. The committee will appreciate that. At this time, we'd like to move to Kodiak. I believe we have a witness there who may wish to speak on this bill. Is Kodiak on the line?
This is the moderator in Kodiak, and she doesn't have anything to say at this time.
The members of the committee would certainly love a comment, but if you're sure, then we will move on and discuss the bill here at the committee. All right, hearing no further comments from Kodiak, we thank you for being present on the line. Is there anyone else on the system who would like to speak on this issue? Hearing none, I'll keep the microphone open, and we'll proceed with our discussion of the committee substitute. Is there any member that would like me to discuss in any further detail or try to make absolutely clear the nature and difference of the two CSs? Okay, now, number two, the primary situation between number one and number two is that number two eliminates any provision dealing with annexations proposed by the Local Boundary Commission on their own initiative, number one. Number two eliminates any reference to a rather interesting situation where a group of citizens living adjacent to a municipality petition the Local Boundary Commission to be annexed by that municipality, and the municipality refuses and says, no, we don't wish to incorporate that area. Then again, the Local Boundary Commission would have to make a decision. And I would say that it's logical to assume that in that circumstance, the people wishing to be annexed could easily demonstrate or would choose to demonstrate their feelings. So eliminating that portion gives us a zero fiscal note, but also does not provide for the first circumstance where the Local Boundary Commission on its own initiative decides to go in and recommend an annexation. Now that is, I would imagine, rather rare, but nonetheless is allowed. And it would be the judgment of the committee whether or not to deal with that or to really focus on municipally requested annexations, Representative Furness.
Mr. Chairman, since it's your piece of legislation, Lisa, you were introduced to commissary. Since you introduced the legislation by request, is it your preference that we consider version one or two?
Well, I think what I'd like to do at this meeting is to discuss it, collect as much comment as possible, send these two versions to obviously the interested and many people at the other end of the teleconference, let them have an opportunity, having read the thing, to make a comment. My own feeling personally is that given a budget that would permit it, I would sort of like to see version number one, possibly if there are members of the public in Haines, maybe Mayor Henderson has a strong feeling one way or another. And Bob, if you need me to restate the question, let me know. Otherwise, maybe you have a comment for us.
I'm afraid I was in conversation. Would you restate the question, please?
Yeah, I certainly would. We've got two versions of the bill we're looking at. One version deals with the circumstance where a municipality requests an annexation and states who will pay for what and so forth. The other version says that if an annexation is proposed, if an annexation is not requested by a municipality, the Director of Elections shall supervise the election. What that means is basically that if a municipality requests this poll or the annexation, the municipalities will pay the cost of the poll. By having no cost to the state, we increase the chances of the bill moving. The circumstance that we don't address is the rather rare circumstance where the Local Boundary Commission on its own will decide to initiate an annexation, in which case the state would have to pay the costs in one bill, or that circumstance is simply not covered in the other bill. That's what we're talking about. I don't know if I made myself clear enough.
Well, I have no problems with the municipality requesting the survey to pay for the cost of the election. Again, I think that in the other case, probably the state should, but again, it's a rare case, and there would be nothing that would keep the municipality from paying for the cost if they really wanted it, would there be?
No, sir. There would be no problem there, except that the area to be annexed might unlike Haines, might not be in an incorporated area, and there might not be any municipality to request it. In other words, if you have a city annexing an area adjacent, and the city has not requested the annexation, one version would say the state pays, the other version would just say there would not be a required election.
Well, that's a pretty hard question for us to answer, but there is certainly lots of possibilities like Petersburg and Wrangell and even Skagway.
Well, why don't we send you copies of both versions, and you'll have some time to give it some thought, and maybe give me a call, and I'll present your comments to the committee at the next hearing.
That would be much better. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Representative Bruinberg.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I hate to focus on one small section of the bill, which I don't consider to be the most important section, frankly, with due respect. The cost of an election under committee substitute version 1 is $8,000 for the first fiscal year, $8,600. That's nothing. The real important question, it seems to me, is the question that the research paper from the House Research Agency focuses on. Different states have different mechanisms for conducting the election. In some states, you have to have a majority of people in the area to be annexed. In other states, it has to be both within the area to be annexed and within the municipality. In other states, it's not the number of people, but the value, your vote is weighted according to the amount of property you own, the assessed valuation of the property you own. And these are very sensitive political questions that are far more important than $8,600 the first fiscal year.
Excuse me, you're breaking up badly.
If you get closer,
Breaking up is not hard. can you hear me better now, ma'am?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Again, this is Max Gruenberg. I think that what we need to do is to send to the mayor and to people that House research paper and anything else they, so they can see the model that other states have adopted. There are 10 different models from different states here, and these are really important questions. We should have the input of the Municipal League, input from around the state on, I'd hate to just precipitously move this bill out without really thinking on how that election is going to be conducted.
Thank you very much, Representative. I'll have committee staff gather up some witnesses who can speak to these issues at our next meeting, and hopefully the members would give a little bit of thought to these two versions. I think that the issue is pretty basic between the two. They're identical bills, except one deals with the circumstance of annexations proposed by the local boundary commission or by citizens. The other only deals with annexations proposed by municipalities. If you feel that you can speak favorably and work towards passage of a bill with an $8,000 fiscal note that extends its provisions a little bit, or you prefer to keep it more conservative, I would certainly respect your feelings on this. I think the important thing for the citizens that spoke today is that when the adjacent community makes a move on their property, that the local boundary commission not act without hearing from the people concerned. On the other hand, the other extension of the bill, I think, is valid, and it's really a policy judgment for us to make. Representative Furness and then Representative Bruinberg. Oh, forgive me. Again, it's Maru, Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm glad we're not on television here so the folks back home can see what's happening. I would like to challenge the...
not hearing any transmission.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
I would like to challenge my distinguished colleague from Spinard that since he figures $8,600 is nothing, if he would make out a check in that amount and send it to me, since he considers it nothing, it will have no effect on his bank account, but it will have an effect on my bank account because it means something to me. Now, I speak in favor of, CS2. I think that a bill with a zero fiscal impact will certainly have a better chance of making it to the legislature and be better than nothing. At the same time, in any more serious vein, I would like to request Representative Gruenberg to come up with perhaps a proposed constitutional amendment or something of that nature, since he is the one who commissioned the study by the House Research Agency on this whole matter of municipal annexation. I think it does need to be addressed in a more serious manner than what this bill is going to do.
Representative Gruenberg has a comment.
I'll meet the challenge.
It will be taken up at the next meeting, the issue of constitutional amendments. I'd like to appoint Representatives Maru and Gruenberg as a subcommittee to deal with that issue. We will pursue the bills as presented as well, and hopefully on Wednesday next, move one or another committee substitute from the committee. If any member has technical amendments or other changes that they feel would support the passage of this bill, I would certainly welcome them and appreciate your cooperation. And I'd like at this time to thank very deeply those people who came out to this meeting in Haines to express their concerns. Your testimony has been listened to very carefully by the seven members of this committee, and once again, thank you so much. At this time, we're going to move on to House Bill 139. Our teleconference time is now over. It is 4 p.m., so we'll close that segment of the hearing. Once again, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for your participation. This is Representative Gall. I'm signing off with Haines. We do are going to have just a brief pause here for the teleconference moderator to adjust the lines, and Alita to make any arrangements that you need to make regarding receiving the telecopied material that will be coming up to you.
Yes, Representative Gall, this is Alita Haines. I tried just before the teleconference to get that from a telecopier, but we were having a lot of trouble with the lines today. I don't know if it'll work yet.
Greg and Juno, we will send operating properly. This concludes this afternoon's teleconference on House Bill 15. Again, if you would send your final stats to the address TCJNU. Thank you. Juno Cliff.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, now to the fun. Everybody now grab your amendments. We're not going to move House Bill 139 out of committee today. I had a meeting with Representative Adams this morning. I'd like to report on that. And I've had some meetings with...
Did we say anymore?
Well, no, it's really quite positive. In fact, Representative Furness's amendment, I think, demonstrates that there is a possibility of getting behind a fiscally responsible approach to municipal grants without hamstringing the municipalities. And I think that's in everybody's interest. And finding the mechanism is something which needs to be accomplished. The discussions that have gone on since our last meeting on this bill are something like this. I contacted the Department of Administration and the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, the Office of the Governor, both Mr. Shively and Mr. Gillespie, and Spoke with Lisa Rudd, Deputy Commissioner Smith, and Deputy Commissioner Stock. All of them basically felt that what we should do is move the bill out of committee, move it on to finance, and let them negotiate with the finance committee on it. I went to speak to Representative Adams today to find out whether he, like some of you, had specific objections to this sort of a bill. Or I shouldn't say like some of you, like various people. He indicated no, he did not have any prior judgment on this, although he had heard through his staff that people were concerned about the concept of writing regulations without any kind of hint as to where those regulations might lead. Whether or not the specific guidelines should be in statute or regulation is something worthy of discussion. Whether we should develop guidelines for regulation or whether we should simply develop guidelines for municipal grant administration. I think there are some drawbacks and advantages to both perspectives. What we're going to do is set up some meetings between Representative Adams' staff and our committee staff. All of you are invited to participate to the extent that you wish. If you'd like to really be in the heart of it, that would be wonderful. If you'd like to just be advised as to what's going on, we'll handle it that way. It's really up to each member to determine how involved they wish to become on this. The purpose of the meetings would be to see what kind of amendments would help speed the bill through the Finance Committee and lead to final passage. And I think the exchange I had with Representative Furness is probably as good an example as any of one place that we might direct our energies. The comment was given to me that we don't want to restrict the ability of the municipalities to implement these grants, and I agree with that 100%. My response was, however, should there not be some sort of guidelines as to how the money is held? for example, to suggest that it be put in a bank rather than in somebody's desk drawer. Right now, that sort of regulation would be illegal. The other issue, it would be against statute for the state of Alaska to make a regulation stating...
Oh, regulation.
Yes, sir. Right. But yet, you know, how would these controls come into existence? They either come into existence by contract, by regulation, or by law. And the Department of Administration seems to feel that it does not have the freedom to do the same kind of contracting that BCNRA seems to feel it has, and resolving this in a clear way, without any particular intent, but for clarity, is, I think, a goal everyone can get behind. The kinds of issues that I raised to Representative Furness were, how will the money be held? Who gets ownership of the interest? It might be interesting to the members of the committee to hear, and this is parlor conversation, and I don't wish to commit Representative Adams to anything or to have him be quoted through hearsay on this. But basically, the conversation was this. I said, the Attorney General says the money belongs to the state. I said to him, Representative Adams, do you think that it should belong to the state, belong to the city, or belong to the Capital Project? His feeling was that the interest should go to the Capital Project, and that way eliminate some of the money that might have to be paid by the state at a later date. So there are a lot of approaches to the management of these grants, and I think if we start with a real positive attitude and see what seems to be right, maybe we can get something out of this committee that will not create the fears that the present bill creates. If we fail, we can always pass out the present bill, but we're going to give ourselves another week and a half to fool with it. And as I say, I'll announce to each member, and Bob will contact your offices to advise you of each and every meeting that takes place on this and to solicit your recommendations and comments. We've got 20 minutes to shoot it around, and Representative Furness.
I guess the only thing I disagree with, since we as a legislative body are going to be the persons that ultimately have to vote on this and be comfortable with it, rather than having staff trying to handle this out, I think we as legislators ought to be dealing with it.
I'm prepared to start with you right now.
I've got some suggestions and information I'd like to share with the body, and then it was probably take a few minutes for the chairman. Let me pass it around.
May I inquire? Yeah. It would be really helpful to me if there are any other
amendments and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that we have in front of us all amendments.
Let's
so
have Representative Kopanen make his comment that he was just getting ready to make. Bob, would you please identify by name and announce each amendment and either place it in front of each member or say where we would find it so that we can gather those up right now?
Okay.
Well, Representative Maru has an amendment on the floor, I believe, or on the
table. I'm aware of three amendments.
Sure.
One by
Walt.
I think we need it.
That's what I'm trying to hear. Okay. Now, I have a Furness amendment here. Does everybody have that?
Yeah.
All right. I have a Department of Administration amendment that looks like this.
Yeah.
It should be in your packet. If you look through those papers in your packet, I think you'll turn it up. It is the
20?
It is the changing of the word shall to may, and also the addition of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs with regard to Section 317. If any member is lacking that, if you just say so.
I don't have that.
Okay.
Sure.
I'll,
if you'll give me a complete set, if they're not in the packet, it's because...
I would be opposed to either passing the bill out or considering any amendments until we've really studied the material. Part of my business before being elected to the legislature was to do contract work for private nonprofits and small community. And one of the problems that kept arising because of the state's essentially lack of consistent regulation or any regulation was the fact that many of these groups had federal grant money, such as Head Start and the like, and even fire volunteer fire departments, that had to be audited under the appropriate federal regulations. And we have attachment P of the OMB here, which is a modern version of what we were doing then. The problem arose that in many of these instances we had to account for the local or state share of the money. And in the lack of proper state oversight of those monies, many of those monies coming from pass-through funds to the legislature, we had a devil of a time with the Fed and in fact, in some cases, had a difficult time making sure that we continue to receive the federal money. Even though we had the state money, we couldn't prove we had them properly. So, you know, I think people should look at the program. I don't think we should have, you know, excessive regulation, and I certainly don't think we should have contradictory regulations. We should understand the problem is a little more complex than we're thinking of, and actually being more liberal in giving out state money sometimes means the loss of federal money, as we just found in our longevity bonus. It also subjects us to federal penalties that we may not be aware of at the time.
So then, just so that I make sure we understand this, you're stating, and I looked at that, the audit requirements and so forth, I would like to just point out to the members that we not only have a House Research Agency report on, a House Research Agency report on how several other states manage this problem, but in addition, we also have a request in for information on several other states, and we should have that by our next meeting. Also, Representative Wallace has been kind enough to provide us with the Superior Court decision relating to a case involving the administration of grants, and it would be my hope that maybe if at some point in this meeting, Representative Wallace, maybe you would just be able to speak briefly to this so that we would understand what your intentions were when you first provided us with that. So which is mine?
May I inquire?
Now,
there
are two people seeking the floor. I just want to make sure that, I mean, you're one of them, sir. I just want to make sure that we have all of the amendments before us that have been offered by members of the committee.
Just a point of clarification.
Yes, sir.
I'm looking at the one on top here that says separate DCRA regulations.
Right.
In line two, somebody struck through shall
right.
and put may.
Right.
And the same in line five,
right.
they changed
right.
must to
right.
may.
Right.
Now, is the amendment that's being submitted by the agencies, the joint amendment?
The agencies conceded the may, submitted the rest. They submitted what was originally typed, and in a discussion before the committee, they said, Anselm and Jeff said, may is fine.
Okay, because that's still an open question in my mind.
All of these are open questions. These are proposals before the committee. It is true Representative Maru's amendment is still technically before us, but we're you know, kind of just going to deal with it all informally until the members reach some consensus on where to go. I'm sorry, someone on this side was seeking the floor, Representative Furness and Representative Maru.
Mr. Chairman, if I could maybe take a minute of the committee's time to explain what we've done here, give a little rationale behind it. You had indicated in your presentation a few minutes ago that some other states would be sending information. We've contacted NCSL directly, and to our chagrin, there is no other state that has information. The best we can come to is Delaware, and I've shared a copy, a very bad copy, of what Delaware has put together. If we can take a minute, I'd like to just walk through this.
Should we get some, do we have copies of that out?
Yeah, we already gave us copies.
Oh, I see. I regret that I didn't.
I took yours.
I'm all set.
All right. What Delaware did in some time back, they went through, and if you draw your finger, draw your ticket to the bottom half of this paper. I've got a copy of that. It's going to tell us anything. What Delaware has done is put in their regulation, at least in their statute, for example, number one, is that before an agency can receive a grant.
Excuse me, Representative. Now I do have four amendments. Do you all have all four?
I think
right.
we do.
Okay.
Really, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead with those,
please.
Again, what Delaware has done, before an agency can receive a grant, it must be incorporated as a nonprofit or under the umbrella of a parent organization which is incorporated as a nonprofit. Number two, it must have bylaws that clearly state the purpose of the corporation, include definitions of duties of the board of directors. Each one can read this, but these are the kinds of things that they have put in their statute. We checked California and some of the others, and they just, no other state really wanted to address it. And this is probably, we went through the library over here. I also had a chance to talk to Billy Berrien today about somewhat the legislative history of Section 318. And Billy said that it was a point when Abgross was AG, Hammond was the governor, and I guess the House and Senate got together, and they really, it was a big shooting match. One thing that the legislature wanted to do was to be able to preserve the ability of, first of all, directing grants, but be responsible for their action. The other thing, they did not want administration coming in, for the lack of a better word, mucking up the situation, whereby putting unnecessary rules and regulations in the face of what they were trying to do. And
taking legislative responsibilities, essentially.
Right. Now, what Billy has suggested is the language that I have here. I had him draft it. Basically, what we do, we combine 318 with preserve it. It says here now, notwithstanding, forget the other here, but except as provided in B of this section, the state agency may not adopt regulation, impose additional requirements, or procedure to implement, interpret, make specific, or otherwise carry out the provisions of 353 through 17, unless required by federal government for participation in the federal program. It goes on to say here, the commissioner of administration shall adopt regulations to implement the provisions of 315 through 17, but the regulations may include only provisions that establish procedure for safekeeping in investment of grant monies, management and disposition of properties required by grant monies, and post-audit of grant transactions. This, in my opinion, this addresses, it gives the administration a great deal of latitude in the drafting regulations that are to the point, that are on point. Mr. Chairman, one last point here, then I'll relinquish the floor. You have with you, I gave you another copy here of section 4460.030, and it has to do with regulation. Statute. I think, does everyone have a copy of that? Mm-hmm. I actually should have it there.
Yeah, I do. Well, just go right ahead.
All right. Now, it says here, consistency between regulation and statute. If by express or implied terms of a statute, a state agency has authority to adopt regulations, implement, interpret, make specific, or otherwise carry out the provision of a statute, no regulation adopted is valid or effective unless consistent with the statute and reasonably necessary to carry out the purpose of the statute. Now, again, if you tie this all together, it basically says that we do not give sort of a blank check to the administration to go and develop regulations, particularly in a situation like this that is very sensitive, in my opinion, to the legislative process. I think the amendment that Mr. Beria has drafted here gives us at least some protection of the legislative body. It gives the administration the ability that it's asking to develop regulations to safeguard the investment of funds. It clearly sets out who has what responsibilities, authorities, and abilities. I think it needs to test. That's the end of my
Thank you. Just one clarifying question. I know that this may end up being a debate, so I'd like to not debate it now, but would you just consider between now and the next time we speak the possibility that Section B alone would satisfy your purpose?
No, because I think a lot went into developing the original language in 318.
Okay, as I say, I know there will be some disagreement, right, but I hope you consider it, because I think that when you take 44 and put it together with Section B, that basically there is your limiting language. So
you take what now?
When you take the passage you just read to us and combine that in the statutes with the amendment that you've offered, I think it serves the same function, and I will go to Billy on that too, but just give it some thought. Representative Copen?
Mr. Sherman, I've been recognized before.
I'm sorry, sir. Representative, it's true. Representative Maru and then Representative Copen, and I'm sorry.
Okay, I'd like to propose, I'm not moving the amendment now. I'm not moving the motion now, rather, whatever. But I'm suggesting to the committee here that we can throw all these together. We can have a sweeper amendment to the effect that the Maru amendment, the Furness amendment, and the Department amendment can be all put together. By doing the following, you start with the Furness Amendment, and first of all, in B on the first line, and on the third line, we interchange the word shall and may, so that it first reads, the Commissioner of Education may adopt regulations, but these regulations shall include only provisions. That's number one. The second thing is that my language will go right at the end of B. Mm-hmm. Representative Furness has come up with a language very similar to the department's language, mm-hmm. and they say what the provisions can be.
Mine
provides some language regarding philosophy of how far it shall go. That will combine the three amendments. The only question that would be remaining of the three amendments in combining them is that Furness Amendment says Commissioner of Administration, the Department says Commissioner of CNRA. And I'm not addressing that, but I'm pointing
that out. That's addressed when you put in that this thing here, this separate DCRA regulation amendment. It breaks down the chapter to, I mean, it's not addressed in Mr. Furness's amendment as written, but if, as you say, you combine it all and make the necessary corrections,
then you get the circumstance where CNRA is taking care of 317 and admin is taking care of 315 and 316, and you incorporate that language into Representative Furness's amendment, and everything would be consistent. Representative Copeland.
If I just wanted to ask Representative Furness if he had perhaps an idea, would be useful to take some of the things that may be redundant or may, you know, simplify the amendment somewhat. I'm going along with the idea of a sweeper amendment, perhaps, but not quite as thorough, and include some of their language and some of this language in a letter of intent to accompany this bill to sort of clarify the material.
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond to that, I think we ought to keep this as simple as possible, and I think the series of amendments together can probably do it. In my opinion, it is advantageous for us to take some of the information here, synthesize this, but put it in those specific sections, particularly the one, the grant to name recipients. It would be probably proper to say in the grant to name recipient that that name recipient should be a nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
We probably want to say that it should have bylaws and whatever. Mm-hmm. These are some good statutory guidelines that they can follow. Mm-hmm.
501c3.
yeah, those kinds of things. And I certainly have no objection. I think it's preferred that we do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I want to always hold firm on, Mr. Chairman, is that a lot was paid to put in statute section 318. And there's a tremendous amount of history behind that. If you read that very closely, you'll see what it proposed to do. It is proposing to preserve the legislature's ability to pass grants to a community or to whatever. And if you look at the original version of the bill, that this takes that out of there. And I don't think we want to give that up.
I don't differ with you at all. I just think it's a question of doing it responsibly. Representative Maru, then Representative Bloomberg.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we might do that perhaps between now and the next meeting, that the staff could get together with Representative Furness and combine these three amendments. I certainly would have no objection as long as my language is maintained at the end as a philosophical statement.
Mm-hmm.
I further recommend that when our committee is leaving.
No, go ahead.
I further
scare
recommend.
Scare them away there, Roger.
Right.
Go. Don't worry about them. Just go on.
Yeah, call on. We're all.
That's where the cookies are, though.
Yo, can we call a 2 minute at ease, Mr. Chairman?
Well, this has nothing to do with Representative Furness.
What do you want me to tell the folks? I'm with you. Let's do it. Let's adjourn.
Okay,
wait,
another thing I was going to say
was something I wanted to bring up.
Was that the Delaware resolution, I think, should go...
I'm going to talk to that.
Portions of this should go into a letter of intent, not into statutes.
May I speak to that, Mr. Chairman?
I agree with you that we don't want to clutter up the statute with too much...
You got it. Put it in a letter of intent.
You know, but make sure that our language leads to regulations that are specific enough to quiet the fears of those honest municipalities while not necessarily quieting the fears of those who need the control. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, what I would like to suggest is that we designate Representative Furness as the subcommittee to deal with this, and we present, like Andre said, Walt with our stuff here. And I want to present one thing. I'm very impressed with this Delaware. And what I'm going to present to him is that to section, and it's within the title of the bill, so we can do it, that section 316 be amended to make the present language subsection A, and then I have another subsection B, basically as the Delaware statute. And what Walt will come back to the committee next week with is a committee substitute, and certainly the committee can throw out some of the Delaware language if they want to toss in, add anything they want, but that would be melded into a committee substitute. And we can give the Municipal League and the various municipalities copies of the committee substitute, teleconferences and everything, and then that would be on the floor for discussion. But I think that Andre's suggestion, designate Walt as the subcommittee to deal with it, and I'll, under serving notice, that I'll do that. And people may decide they don't like it, but at least it's something to talk about.
Okay, well, first of all, as far as developing committee substitutes, I'd sort of rather do that as a committee and not designate Walt to do that.
Whichever you prefer.
What I would do is commit myself to work with Representative Furness and get together with his staff, and our staff, with the finance chair staff, and also, irrespective of our own feelings as to who's boss, we have to bring the agencies into this too. CNRA and admin and the governor's office, it's their bill, and there is no point in proposing proposing something that's going to get vetoed. So let's try to make it a multi-partisan effort. We'll use the committee staff as the central gathering point. No committee substitute will be developed without each member being aware and without each member's comments being solicited and Representative Furness will certainly be deeply involved. I don't want to make any official subcommittees on this because I'm willing to take the burden of the work upon myself.
Well, then I'll get you, I'll do the language on 316 on the Delaware and read the rest. I think everything can be melded in 316.
And Max, I have to be honest with you, I think we should be very conservative on how we deal with statutes not covered by the bill. I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't deal with them, but let's take a very, very considered and careful and slow approach if we're moving beyond the scope of the regime.
You've decided you may not like
it. Well, I don't mean that in any way that would limit the creativity of the committee or the discretion of the members, only to say that the least we can do, the better if we achieve the purpose. You know, I don't want to get into a whole rewrite of the... Well, maybe that's where we'll have to go. I guess I'd like to just say that I'd like to...
I don't know. I'm just saying, if I may bring the representative from Muldoon up today, what I would like to do, and we were talking about whether to have a subcommittee or not, and the chairman is going to be working with you and everybody to meld something together, I will take the responsibility, if it's agreeable, at least come up with the Delaware proposal.
Okay.
And what I would do is give some language to the chairman that the present language in section 316, which is grants to names recipients, mm-hmm. would be subsection A, and this would basically be subsection B.
Well, we may want to retain the present format because you've got the municipal unincorporated.
This would only amend this one section, which is the named recipients. It would just amend this. It doesn't amend the municipalities. And it doesn't demand
it seems the... Where we are now is starting a very lovely process of deliberation on exactly what would be the most proper way to deal with these problems.
Why don't we just get together on it?
And that would be really good.
Sure.
I would be grateful if you look at the research report that deals with how states other than Delaware address the problem. And what
is there one?
Yes, sir.
But they don't do that thing.
Well, it's very interesting, though, in a certain regard. It points out, number one, that these kinds of municipal grants and grants to unincorporated, to a nonprofit entity programs are very rare in other states, number one. Number two, that as our revenues decline, we may find that things are going to change markedly in our ability to conduct these kinds of programs here.
I've got another document that should go along with that, and we'll get a copy of that.
Bob, would you duplicate that for the members? And number three, that the post-audit requirement that Representative Furness puts in his draft committee substance or amendment there is the heart of what the other states are doing. So I share that information with you, suggest you take a look at that. And reflect on that as you look at the Delaware.
Roll by that sentence again about the heart of something.
Well, most of the other states, the heart of their oversight programs are in the audit rather than in anything else. They say, here's the money, here's what you have to do with it, come back next year and show us every step you took with that money.
Okay.
And then they've got laws and regulations, presumably, that deal with the disposition of public funds. What we lack is any opportunity to create regulations dealing with how these kinds of public funds are managed, and that, of course, is the challenge that we're facing at this point.
Mr. Chairman, if I may read something.
Mr. Furness.
This is a thing from Delaware, but I think it hits it on the head. It says, the support of the legislative sponsor is crucial for any nonprofit agency that wish direct funding in Alabama, Alaska, South Carolina, and Tennessee. Unlike Delaware, however, none of these legislatures has a formal application or decision-making process designed exclusively for nonprofit appropriation.
Speaking about the named recipient grant program, if you are going to actually be conversing on this, I'd better give you the correspondence that passed between me and Marty Rutherford of Division of Municipal and Regional Assistance dealing with the fact that the grants to unincorporated communities and the grants to named recipients are almost indistinguishable. And they should certainly be very distinguishable as to, if I could just ramble on for a minute, and let's adjourn. It's 4:30.